Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. This is the show where you have a chance to call in and ask your questions about investing or legal or taxes. And I'd like to welcome my co-host in studio with me this morning. First of all, Kevin Steggy with the Baker Coastal CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Kevin.
Hello.
And Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And anyway, we're on the air here to answer your questions. If you do have a question, you can give us a call, and don't hesitate to do so. We're going to talk about the market. We're going to talk about what's going on in the economy. We're going to talk a little bit about legal aspect, and we're going to talk a little bit about taxes today. So you can give us a call at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626, or toll free at 800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. And you know, guys, they just recently put out the unemployment numbers. And, of course, looking at the unemployment is what helps the economy go. And if you have low unemployment, hopefully that means more people are working, more people are making money. The one thing that most of the papers, and I woke up this morning, I got my Columbian out, and I'm looking at the headline of the Columbian, and it says, "Surge of hiring cuts jobless rate." I almost have to call the Columbian the government newspaper, or you could call it Pravda. I mean, pretty close, probably the same thing. But they're reporting the same mantra, that the problem in America that nobody's facing, nobody, and none of the news networks out there really report it. Even Fox doesn't attack it like they should. The average people getting jobs today are getting paid less than the people were 5, 6, 7 years ago. That is a fact. It's not a make-believe number. It is a reality. The average person is making less money, and everything is costing more. So we are not moving forward. We are moving backward. And if you just look at the jobs we're creating in this country, they are not the high-paying jobs, the good-paying jobs. We need to change things. The other concern I have is, we always tell people about investing. We believe very strongly in demographics, because the more people that are at a certain age who buy certain things, that kind of gives you a key of how the economy is going to go. And that's just kind of common sense if you really think about it. And it's amazing to me how many of these people on TV or on the business networks boo-hoo that. All they talk about is, well, today the market went down because China had a problem. China having a problem does not create a problem in America. That's just totally bunkus. And what it is, it's called filling airtime. And I'm going to feed you full of BS so you believe there's a reason why the market went down 230 points today, because somebody's demonstrating in Tiananmen Square and they're shooting guns off, and that is affecting our economy over here. I got news for you. It doesn't. I got news for you, too. If they had a full-scale war, it may well affect us, particularly if China decided to invade the Middle East or something. Then, yeah, it's going to affect our economy big time. But having a little skirmish isn't going to affect us the least bit. It's a fantasy land. And so what I'm saying to you is, when you invest and you think about investing right now, Carl, you and I work with a lot of seniors. And one of the problems a lot of seniors are having right now, a lot of my clients are getting to the age where they're getting into their 80s and 90s, and they're thinking about getting out of their house and moving into a retirement community. Big problem. Many of those facilities have a waiting list. You can't just say, I'm selling my house and I'm going to go live there, because there's no room there. So when you look at this and the fact that, somebody is turning, 10,000 people are turning 65 every single day. Mm-hmm. Now, if that doesn't tell you that 10, 15 years from today, we got a problem in long-term care housing, retirement housing. I mean, just think about it. All these people are getting older, and these 10,000 people, how many of them ever live to hit 80? When they hit 80 15 years from now, that means almost 10,000 of them a day are hitting 80.
You know, you mentioned one thing too, Chuck, about relating the employment and good jobs with this problem of the seniors finding places to live. And certainly that's true. But when you consider that a lot of times, like in assisted care places, like nurses' aides and people who work in those places, they make less than the people who work at McDonald's.
And they're very low wage.
And yet they are taking care of your mom and dad or you or me. And they have to deal with a lot of really difficult things. I mean, it's fine and dandy if you're dealing with, you know, competent, just nice, thoughtful elderly people. But unfortunately, some of us get really cranky and unpleasant when we're older. I hope I don't do that, but some people do. And who knows? Maybe even I will. I don't know. But the fact remains, they have a very difficult job. They deal with frustrating, you know, dementia people and all sorts of things. And yet they're paid so poorly that that's one of the reasons they tend to have a lot of turnover. And so, you know, it's kind of odd the way we evaluate the value of the work that's performed. But I guess the answer then would be that it would cost a whole lot more money to live in an assisted care place if you paid those people a whole lot of money. Now, I wonder if it wouldn't work. I'm always like to think about, you know, paying less to the guy at the top, the number cruncher guy. But that's just, you know, just me. Number crunchers. I didn't mean bean counters.
He didn't mean CPAs.
No, I'm sorry.
He was not talking about CPAs.
Oh, I'm talking about CPAs. Yeah. No, they're an integral part of the world.
And you weren't talking about the attorneys either, were you?
Well, no, of course not. We don't crunch the numbers.
Of course not.
We're for truth, justice, and the American way.
And just send the bill.
There you go. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, Carl, you bring up an interesting question, because one of the problems is this is an exploding industry that's going to require more and more people to work in it, and it is one of the lower paying ones. But again, with all the liability, and as you know about liability, All the lawsuits, all the suits that go into that, and the amount of insurance they got to buy, it's kind of like I have clients that are medical doctors, and the fact is about a medical doctor, they have to buy a lot of E&O coverage, because in spite of maybe the president of the United States never makes a mistake, but I don't know any other professional that doesn't make mistakes from time to time. Crap happens. And people make mistakes, and they have to be accountable for it. Unfortunately, if you're a medical doctor or you're a surgeon, the mistake you make may cost somebody their life, and you will get sued. And they know this. That's why their liability insurance is so expensive. And if you run a nursing home, there are now all kinds of – and you and I knew a couple ladies who started a company where all they did was go to nursing homes and long-term care facilities – and they were ombudsmen for the patient, and they went around to make sure these facilities were doing the right thing. And a lot of them got fined, because you've got a fiduciary. You talk about fiduciary responsibility. You and I, well, all three of us have a fiduciary responsibility to our client to do the right thing. You're in a nursing home, or you're in a long-term care facility, or even a retirement living facility. The people who run that have a lot of fiduciary responsibility to protect the people that are in that facility.
Well, they do, and it's really difficult, because as we age, you know, we become, you know, more frail and more prone to accidents, and some things are almost inevitable. Like if you're going to try to put your family member in a facility, and you want to be able to ensure that they'll never fall, good luck. I mean, you know, almost all old people will fall at one time or another. And whether they fall and get really, really badly hurt or not is, you know, is the difference between, you know, big trouble and relatively little trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to bring this up because I think it's very important that we take a look and you look at the economy. You want to look at what's going on in the economy and where are things really moving. And the fact is America's getting older. And so if America's getting older, there are certain things that are going to be more and more costly as time goes by. Aging products are going to be more and more popular. Medical drugs, all those kinds of things. Medical facilities. A lot of things are going to be more and more used as the country gets older and older. But it's just something to think about. And think about the jobs, because if the jobs that are being created are all low-paying jobs, who's going to pay the way in taxes? Who's going to pay the way in Social Security? Who's going to pay the way? They got to have jobs. We got to have a workforce. We got to have a workforce that are continually growing, just like we did when we went out in the job market. We went and continued to grow in our profession. Young kids today have to have an opportunity to grow in a profession. You just got to have it.
You know, Chuck, went to an economic summit here over this last week, and they discussed the numbers, particularly in the East County, the Portland, Vancouver area, and the East County area. And they indicated that in 5 years, Generation Y will be the most employed generation. In other words, the baby boomers will be retiring or phasing out or what have you. And of course, the baby boomers are the higher income earners right now. And of course, that'll be transitioning over into Generation Y. But I think that's a indication exactly what you're saying is the demographics are finally coming through here and they can see that happening. But having the gist of the economic summit was that the trained workforce is not produced. It doesn't have the skills, especially in the younger generations coming into the workforce. They don't have the skills for the manufacturing, you know, the science, technology, mathematics areas that need to be filled. And that's just, you know, that's a tough thing for the economy.
Points I want to make right now, if you have an investment portfolio and you do not have a strategy of preservation of principal with what's coming down the pike here, in October is a bad month. I mean, we had Black Friday, we had the crash in 08. I mean, this is not a good month, and when I'm reading these things that the paper's putting out, I'm going to just give this quick comment. The Dow Jones closed at 17,969. It was up 208, but here's the reality of it. Since 10/9/07, when the market hit its high before the crash, we are up a whopping 20.09% in 6 years and 11 3/4 months. And that's an average annual return of 2.88. You cannot grow an economy when your top 30, your largest 30 stocks are only growing at the rate of 3% a year, or less than 3% a year. The Dow Jones closed 12,3199 at 11,497. So for the last 13 years and 9 months, we're up 3.51. That's a little more respectable, but still not in the area that we need to be. And I think people need to take a serious look at this and say, hey, wait a minute. Are we really growing the economy? The S&P, top 500 growth stocks in America, which now really are not American stocks, they're international stocks. The whole world kind of changed in 2000. The S&P closed at 1967.90. That's up 21.73 or up 1.12 for the day. Now, where do we stand versus 10/9/07? We're up 25.73 in 6 years and 11 3/4 months. That's an average annual return of 3.69, under 4%. You're talking about an index that the previous 80 years averaged almost 10, and we're less than 4. Look, this is not good. This is not a good recovery in any imagination. And if you go back to 99, the S&P over 13 years and 9 months is averaging 2.48%, lower than the Dow. The top 500 growth stocks is averaging less than the 30 big slugs. There's a problem. It's called growth. And if you can't see it, if you don't see it, you got to open your eyes. because it's right in front of you. You know, it's kind of like you hear people say, you know, we've seen this movie before. Hey, folks, we've seen the movie. The question is how do you want the movie to come out? If you don't have a strategy, I can tell you where it's coming out. It's going to be a real decline in the market, and you're going to lose a lot of money. So you're listening to Investing Simplified. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
Guns and money.
Huh. Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson, and it is time for Carl's comments. And that's just the time when I bring up some subject that has come up in my practice or that has come to my attention in the last week or two. And one of the things that we often talk about is bank accounts and things like that. And a lot of times, it's a good planning tool is to use beneficiary designations or transfer on death designations, or sometimes they call it a pay on death. And this is just a situation where a bank account or a stock account or a life insurance policy has a name that says, if I die, the assets of this account go to my children or go to my wife or go to some other person or some organization. And they transfer as a matter of law. That's a contractual responsibility between the financial institution and you as to what happens to your money. It's a very good planning tool because it does avoid probate, or that becomes a non-probate asset. And in many instances, we use that in combination with living trusts and other devices to make sure that probate can be avoided. And so it's important to set those things up properly and also to be consistent with your desires. And so what I'm going to just suggest as a plan for doing that is go to the bank while you can. Please don't wait until you're sick to do this, because most often the bank or the financial institution, they want you to do some things in order to transfer those assets or in order to set up your bank accounts in a different way. They want you to go and come into the bank so that they can see you, so that they can check your ID, so that they can make sure that you are the person that you're supposed to be. And then they want probably to see the person that you want to name as a beneficiary. They may or may not, but that just depends. But nonetheless, they'll want you in person to do it, or they'll want to be assured that you did it and you did it because of your own volition. More and more today, people in the financial industry are very, very cautious of changes, especially when they're dealing with the accounts of seniors, because they know that there are a lot of unscrupulous people out there and, unfortunately, sometimes unscrupulous relatives who are trying to take advantage of them. So they are very, very careful. Unfortunately, this can create some real problems for planning, especially if you wait until you're sick or you're ill or you have some dementia issues. Either way, it's very important to do those kinds of things right away. So I would, first of all, go to the bank while you can, and in other words, so that you are competent and you know what you're doing, and then go to the bank and ask them, first of all, you say, okay, I want to put this on a transfer on death designation. And that's a better choice than what most often do is they call it putting person on the bank account. Well, most banks mean that that's a joint account. That then means that there's a presumption that they're a co-owner. That also makes you vulnerable to the creditors of your child who becomes a joint account holder. So a better device is the transfer on death or pay on death or beneficiary designation type arrangement. So you go there to the bank and you say, I want to put a transfer on death on this account. And then you want to ask your bank, you want to ask them, okay, I want a copy of the account designation. I want something in writing that tells me that this is a TOD account or a POD account or a beneficiary account, not a joint account. And then ask the banker to explain to you who gets your money if you die. Make them tell you that because this is important. They may have something different in mind sometimes. Then if the institution ever changes, for example, if it changes, like, for example, Washington Mutual was absorbed by Chase. Well, quite frankly, a number of records from Washington Mutual seem to have gotten lost. And it's very important. So if you ever have that kind of change or change in name, say they change a name of the organization you're going to, then you should go and go back to them and say, I want to see a copy. I want to know how my bank accounts or my stock account or my, you know, beneficiary designations are with your company. And again, ask them for something in writing that says this is what it is as of today. Because quite frankly, it does happen. And this can really mess up your planning because if it turns out, and this has happened on a number of occasions with some of my clients, is they either thought they did or the bank lost it. They had a designation or did it wrong, that is, and they have a designation they thought was a to their children, and they find out that there was none in place. And so then all of a sudden you've got an account that has to go through probate, and it might be, and it's really bad if there's enough money in the account, they could actually have to go through a full probate just to get this one account. And I've had that happen. Under Oregon law, you can do a small estate for under $75,000 in personal property. And I had a case where there was a $90,000 account. Well, it was in the name of the deceased person only, and they thought there was a beneficiary designation. It was the only asset that wasn't taken care of. And so we had to do a full-blown probate, 6 months, the whole bit, all the notices, accountings, inventories, just to get this one bank account. And it was, you know, that's just the way it works. So anyway, so that's my comment. If you're going to use bank accounts and stock accounts and, you know, beneficiary designations, whether it's annuities or life insurance or bank accounts or stock accounts, any of that kind of stuff, make sure that you set it up right now and make sure that you check on it every now and then and make sure you get something in writing so that at least you can go back to the bank and say, well, this is what it's supposed to be. This is what it is. And it's very important because it'll make it a lot easier. It's just being prudent. It's like you know, looking at the balance on your checkbook. It's something to do. So that's Carl's comments today.
You know, Carl, one other thing, too, that I had some people in the other day and I was talking to them, and they're going to be coming and seeing you, and they were talking about adding all their kids on all their accounts. And I was trying to explain to them that, no, you want to definitely make sure you have beneficiaries on your account or a transfer on death, mm-hmm. TOD is sometimes called, but you don't want to actually put their names on the accounts because they then own the account just like you do, and those accounts can be subject to taxes to getting yanked in if the kids get into a lawsuit.
Yeah, that's right. The creditors of the kids can get your money, and that's a bad thing. Especially, you know, so if you, quite frankly, you might want to be cautious about. I have a legal proverb that kind of fits this situation, I'll do legal proverbs some other time. Unless you want to do them today, we can.
No, that's fine. Well, listen, we're gonna take a. Kevin, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just gonna say briefly that. We'll catch it after the break. Sounds like we're into our break mode. So, We'll come back with the tax investigator.
All right. We can't wait. We're going to talk about taxes, everybody's favorite subject.
That's right.
So we're going to come right back with the tax investigator. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Pick up the phone. Give us a call if you have a question. You can call us at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. There's no foolish question when it comes to your money. Give us a call.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and Carl and Chuck, I come in every Saturday morning to do this show with you guys simply so that I get a front row seat to hear the wealth of information and opinions that you gentlemen have. So it's one of those added benefits you get to being part of the show.
Well, we come in so that we can deduct the mileage on our taxes.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I'm not your accountant. No, I'm kidding. Continue your topic there, Carl, I do get questions on occasion about what happens tax-wise if you add somebody to your account. Is that considered a gift, putting somebody's name on your bank account or your brokerage account? And, not the TOD or the POD, but actually adding the name to where they are now a part owner. And you'd think, well, they own this account, so how much did I just gift this person? But it's kind of an interesting principle where a gift does not happen just by putting somebody's name on the account. And this is just a bank account. It's probably different with real estate. But with a bank account, whoever earned the money or deposited the money or contributed it to the account is still considered the owner until that other individual withdraws something from the account. At that point, if the son or daughter took money out, then they are actually taking a gift if they took it for their purposes, as opposed to, maybe taking it out to pay for, your expenses. So,
interesting idea. And then, but if they wait until the person dies, then it is still a gift, but it's a testamentary gift essentially. And I guess if it's a stock thing or an appreciated thing, they get a stepped up basis then.
Yeah.
But if they take it early, they take the basis that they started.
Well,
no,
not exactly. If you give somebody a stock,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're giving them the original cost basis, not the stepped up basis.
Right.
Only get the stepped up basis at death.
Right. Right.
It's okay.
When you die, you get to. But,
yeah,
but if they
exactly.
take it out early, although I don't think there really are joint stock. Yeah, I guess there are joint stock.
Oh
accounts.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah. We have a lot of joint stock, yeah. And that's one of the things we've got to talk to Kevin about when we have that with a husband and wife, and they have a joint account rather than a trust account. The question is, are they both, if you're in Washington, it's a community property state, and technically the wife owned half the stock, the husband owned half the stock, so she'll get a stepped-up basis on half of it. On the other half, she'll carry hers through.
Well, except in Washington, where it's community property, Both the husband and wife will get a full sides get stepped up. Or again, it's true of what
it's
you
true.
Said.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That's one of the real advantages of community property, I think, is we do some work in Washington, not as much as here in Oregon, but that's in many there's lots to commend community property.
There is.
Yes. Yeah, I'm really surprised. Well, I'm not, but California is a community property mm-hmm. state, and Oregon's kind of sitting here in the middle, and they're not.
Yeah.
So maybe someday they'll change.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard our prior show on community property and separate property, there's definitely some planning opportunities if you're moving to or from a community property into a separate property or vice versa. There's some you definitely want to talk to somebody because there's significant planning opportunities there or traps, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So real quick, Carl, real estate, putting somebody's name on real estate, is that different than
I think that's a consummated gift when you change the title to the asset.
I think so.
I'm almost sure of it, that it constitutes a gift of one half or one third or whatever the percentage is of the ownership. And
yeah.
And then that gives rise to the next tax problem, which is that now you've given them your basis. So if you bought that house at $20,000 and now it's worth $300,000, well, guess what? When they turn around and sell that, it might avoid probate if you do it right. But that's the other thing here in Oregon. A lot of times they'll put the name on a deed. They'll go down to the bookstore and get a deed and put the name on there, and they'll put it on wrong. They'll omit anything that will create a survivorship rate. And so not only do they get a lower basis, but they also don't get the whole property when the person dies. So there are reasons not to do that by yourself.
Not good.
Yeah.
So October 15th, deadline for tax returns that are on extension, and probably one of the key things with this, and this hopefully doesn't fit the bill for too many of our listeners. Usually at this point of the game, you knew what you were doing in terms of filing your extension and so on and so forth, but it is also the deadline for recharacterizing an IRA conversion, couldn't think of the word there, an IRA conversion that you might have done for 2013. You put your tax return on extension, you're taking a look at what happened after you made the conversion, and you have a chance to recharacterize that back. And so here's the scenario. You have a regular IRA, you decide to convert that to a Roth IRA in 2013. So you went ahead and you say you took this $100,000 IRA, converted it over into a Roth, you paid the income tax on it because it's treated as a distribution, no penalties, but you do pay the income tax, and you put in your 2013 return on extension, and you haven't filed it yet. You're sitting here looking at this time frame of what happened after you converted it, and there's many times a reason to recharacterize that back to a Roth. And the main reason, as Chuck well knows, is when the assets take a significant drop in value in your Roth and you still have this window available, you probably want to reconvert that back, not have to pay the income tax, and you can recharacterize it later. And since the value of those stocks dropped, you're recognizing a smaller amount in income. And it's kind of a one of the few planning opportunities where you kind of get a see what the results are of your decisions before you put the final nail in the coffin and decide, hey, this is what I want to do.
That's a do-over. That's a mulligan.
It is.
It yeah. is. But boy, sometimes it's a distinct advantage in with what we've got, what we think's coming in the market. There may be advantage for people to consider that type of strategy as we're coming into this, into October, and October's a volatile month.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad thing to have cash and stuff available in your Roth in after a downturn, so that future gains are tax free. So I think that's where you definitely want a financial advisor involved. Who knows your situation and can really help you determine, hey, is this avenue we want to take? And speaking of that, Chuck, I hadn't talked with you about this, but I found this fairly Well, I can imagine what your opinion is on it, but apparently there's a website out there with significant software or mathematical algorithms or analysis where you can, it will be your financial advisor for you. And you've probably seen websites like this where you enter your information, everything about yourself.
Which
I love a website that knows everything about me. And has all my financial assets.
Data. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
but they're safe. They're secure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's not.
So
like,
is the Pentagon.
That's right.
Yeah.
But basically, what they do is they take a look at your portfolio and they give you a cute little box with a few little pointers about where you're at in terms of diversity and this and that. And I just assume that. This probably, I guess, a cookie cutter approach to something like financial advising is just.
Well, you know, Kevin, one of the things that I think most people in America don't really get, and I listen to a lot of the financial shows, and it just sometimes it just makes me wonder what planet these people are on. To me, the world kind of changed after Y2K. We did become a world economy. The S&P 500 growth stocks in America today are not American stocks. They're worldwide stocks. In fact, many of them do more business outside the United States. You know, we only represent, 4% of the world's population? So those stocks do more business outside of America than they do inside of America. So are they following America's economy? Or are they following the world economy? I believe they're following the world economy. And listen, the world economy is a lot more erratic than the American economy. I mean, any way you shape or form, we don't have a society where we overthrow our government every so many years. Many countries in the world do. So it's a big thing. But back to what you said about the cookie cutter approach. I think when you get a cookie cutter approach, you get exactly what you pay for.
That was exactly how I was going to end this. Is the selling point for this is for people who can't afford a full-blown financial advisor, but that's not, the cost of a financial advisor or tax work. I don't know about attorney work, but at least us, you and me, Chuck, that you do get what you pay for.
Absolutely.
And oftentimes you save much more having something done right and planned right than, $149 annual fee at a website.
Let me give you a perfect example. I met with a couple this past week, and they basically did their own taxes. He has his own company. His wife works for a company, and she's maxing out her retirement plan. And when they went on the cookie-cutter approach, they got the assumption that he could only buy an IRA. He could not do a self-employed SEP plan or simple plan or anything. So they're missing a deduction because he's over 50. Instead of 6,500, he could put away 25% up to $262,000, so about $52,000 into a SEP plan. And they're paying a horrendous amount of taxes, but they don't work with a tax person. And I'm hoping to move them to come over and talk to you, because I told them, look, just by working with a CPA and paying the fee with the CPA, understanding what your tax ramifications are, there are things you can do when you own your own company that are very, very advantageous. But if you go online and you look at some of the tax programs on there, they don't tell you because they don't think. They have boxes. You fill out the boxes and it leads you down a path, and it has no variable on that path. But in real life, there's a lot of variables.
Huge amount of variables. That's right. So speaking of planning, the Oregonian had a article here over the last week or so that I thought was pretty, pretty informative. Hopefully, our listeners are attuned to this issue already. I know we've chatted about it before in the past, but this is the case where you've got a retiree pulling in Social Security, coming up on age 70 and a half, and having to take a required distribution from your IRA, which is going to bump your income up. And the surprise that hits some folks is that makes more of your Social Security taxable. And it can be fairly, you know, depending on your numbers, it can be a, you know, a fairly hard tax rate in this particular scenario. And the numbers look good in this article by Brent Hunsiger, is the $9,000 RMD that they had to take from their IRA, that was taxable, plus the Social Security portion that became taxable. It was a $3,000 increase to their tax bill. So that effectively was a 30% tax rate on your IRA distribution.
And even with the fact that they got if they're a married couple, they had double deductions for retirement. And don't they have, and they still only show, what, 85% of your Social Security on your taxes?
That's right. The maximum that your Social Security can be taxed is 85%. Typically, people who...
Yeah, but that's not 85% of the Social Security. It's 85% you show on your tax.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make sure, because it almost sounded like we were saying you could be taxed up to 85% of your Social Security, and I don't want people to think that.
Right. The tax rate is not 85%,
right,
but you might have to show 85% of your Social Security as taxable income, subject to tax.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so there's not much you can do at that point when you're required to pull out money from your IRA, unless you're going to do something that, like, give it to, you know, charity, directly to charity, and some of those options, which are available. But, you know, the flip side of this planning is, do you have deductions still available to you that you're not utilizing? Do you have... you're reporting social, you have an IRA before you reach age 70 and a half, you have an IRA, you're collecting Social Security, and you're not reporting any taxable income for the year because you have a good standard deduction and so on and so forth. You need to make sure you're pulling money out of your IRA, even if you're not required, that is still subject to the zero or the 10% rate, and keeping yourself, getting that IRA value down, and putting it into, you don't have to spend it, you can put it into a brokerage account.
Well, and also savings. One of the strategies, if you're still working, or if you think that when you retire at 70, if you're going to work to 70 and you're going to retire to get the higher Social Security benefit, and you're in a job where you're making about what you were going to make with Social Security when you start taking it, and your retirement benefits are on top of that, and you have a lot of IRA, that's also not a bad time to each year maybe cash out some of that to keep your taxes down low, maybe up to the threshold. And we talk to people, if you can take it up to just before you get to the 28% bracket, you can pull that out and put that into a Roth, pay the taxes on it, put it into a Roth, and not, instead of making your contribution, make it to a Roth. And there are things you can do to push that into. Although I firmly believe, and I know this has been a discussion at Dent's Economic Summit, which I'm sure we're going to hear in October when I go there. But one of the concerns that most economists have, who are non-political economists, that some point in time the government is going to means test Roth, and they're going to means test retirement plans. And there's already been talk, the president talked about this when he talked about people having multi-million dollars in their 401k or multi-million dollars in your IRA. We can't allow that because other people didn't sacrifice and do all the stuff they had to do to get that. But that's not fair in his mind. Anyway, that we're going to start having to means test that or tax it. And I think when you start playing games with that and you start disincentivizing people to plan for the retirement, you're really going to ruin the economy long term. But, you know, at some point in time, we got to reward those that did the things they needed to do.
That's right. So to wrap this up, not a bad idea to check your IRA if you need to take some money out, possibly think of calling it a Roth conversion. And then, as we talked earlier, you can take a look back and see if you want to keep that conversion and pay the tax or undo it. And of course, if you have an RMD, you have to take it out regardless. So that is our tax thoughts for today.
Well, you know, Kevin, one of the things we do need to be talking about here as we're closing out the end of the year is maybe have a little segment on our show where we talk about tax strategies to make your 2014 better than ever.
That's true.
So we'll be talking about that. We'll come right back with Investing Simplified. If you got a question, give us a call. We have a couple lines open here at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. There is no foolish question when it comes to your money, your estate plan, or your taxes. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Okay. Talking about the Knowledge Trust right now, and here we are to answer your questions. If you got a question, give us a call, 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. And this is a point where we kind of catch up on things and kind of discuss things together. I did want to jump back to the report, the income report, because I got a message from Harry Dent, and they did a little research, and they've actually set up an index to follow unemployment. Because of all the misinformation that's out there about unemployment, they wanted to take a stance and just take a jab at it and look at the real unemployment rates. And this is kind of interesting because on the surface of the morning's employment situation release was rosy at best. The labor market beat expectations by 248,000 non-farm payroll employees instead of the anticipated 215,000. More importantly, the unemployment rate dipped from 5.9 to 6.1. This marks the first time the rate has dropped below 6% since July of 2008. However, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story, the analysis reveals that the majority of the 236,000 private job additions, now that concerns me because that means there was 12,000 government jobs. They didn't say anything about that, but the 236,000 private jobs fell below the medium wage level. See chart below. In fact, 47% of all new jobs created in September occurred in the three lowest paying wage buckets, primarily in the retail and the hospitality industries. That means in very low wages. So, you know, when you talk about people getting back to work, you talk about getting the economy going, they got to be getting back to good, healthy paying jobs. And we're just not doing that in this country. We're not doing it. And you can paint the picture however you want to paint it, but there is a reality. And there is a day of reckoning when this is coming. And, you know, we're going to have to get this economy actually cranked up. And the only way to do it is to put an incentive out there for companies to grow. If you don't incentivize people to grow and you don't incentivize people to be entrepreneurs and start their own business and make it so that they can do it without a ton of paperwork and about a ton of taxes and regulations, they're not going to start business. I mean, you drive around Portland and you look at how many of the strip malls, and the question is, are they half full or are they half empty? Unfortunately, some of them only have about 15% of the tenants, and I've seen a couple that have no tenants. I mean, that is scary stuff. And, you know, you just think about the person who built that complex. They may have a lot of money, but I'll tell you what, you can have all the money in the world, but if you build buildings and nobody rents them, someday you will have a problem. It may be sooner than later, but eventually you will have a problem. So we've got to start growing this industry, growing small business owners. And everybody forgets, the majority of people in the United States are hired by small employers. They're not hired by AT&T and big companies or Bank of America. They're hired by small companies, small firms, well under 50 employees. The majority, I think something like 70% of the people that are hired by companies that have less than 50 people, which fits our companies.
Yeah, that's us.
I think one of the most shocking revelations to small business owners who come into my office is the amount of tax that they have to pay on their profit. When you tack in self-employment tax, federal income tax, Oregon income tax, the city and the county taxes, the personal property taxes on their business personal property, it's shocking, and it's disincentivizing, to use a big word you used earlier there, Chuck. You're talking, any significant income, you're easily talking 40% of the net profit. And boy, that just, supposedly it's going, a good portion of that's going into your Social Security account, the 15% that you're paying there. But, for the young workers to say, hey, you'll get that money back in 50 years or so, that's not real much of an incentive. So
no, I like to refer to it as social insecurity
mm-hmm.
for the younger people. It really is. And it's really a shame what we've done with the people's money and how we've misused it. And I say we because we all are part of the blame because we vote for the politicians. And if we vote for, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results? Well, if you vote for incumbents, you are insane because you are doing insanity. You're voting the same idiots in office that have basically put you into debt, put your grandkids into debt, your great-grandkids into debt, and they're not getting any better. They're getting richer, and the economy is getting worse. I don't know. It doesn't seem to make people turn out and vote and get rid of the incumbent, and they need to. We need to get rid of all of them. And, that's just how I feel. I haven't voted for an incumbent for a long time, and I don't plan on this next election voting for any incumbents either.
Mm-hmm. I hope that we don't continue down this road of being fractured to the point where we keep everyone just looks to their own interests. But hopefully, if we all gave a little in terms of making fixes and stuff, it can make a huge difference. But when everybody just looks at their own interest and protects their own interest, it's kind of a snowball effect. And I hope we just don't keep going down that route.
We were talking about the Great Depression before the show came on the air, and the three of us were kind of chatting about grandparents and people that we knew and stories passed down about how they survived. And it was a different time when everybody pulled together. Everybody sacrificed together. Everybody helped their neighbors. Everybody helped each other. And we just don't have that right now in the economy. And it seems like everybody is only for themselves. And you're exactly right, Kevin. We need a leader to stand up and say, look, everybody's got to take a little reduction here. And to turn this economy around and turn this country around and reduce the debt, we're all going to have to give a little. We're going to have to extend. The reality is we're going to have to extend Social Security out to 70 and maybe 75. We're going to have to extend it out. So that means younger people are going to have to look at a longer period of time. Older people that are currently getting it are going to have to take a pay cut. It's not going to be there. So they're going to have to take a reduction. And I know I don't want to hear that. Nobody retired wants to hear that. But that is the reality. And, I think if you have a question of saying, look, you can continue getting 80% of your benefit, or 20 years from now you get nothing, what do you want to do? Or 10 years or 5 years or whenever a collapse happens, and all of a sudden There is no money. What are you going to do? And the fact is, we're printing money every day right now because there's less money coming into Social Security than going out. So we're printing money every day to print those checks. So the reality is we're going a little bit deeper in debt every single day with that program. And I don't like the word entitlement because I don't call Social Security an entitlement because I personally have paid into it for over 40 years. So I don't consider an entitlement when I want my money back.
Mm-hmm. What was that? There was an old song by Tennessee Ernie Ford, 16 tons and what do you get?
Another day older and deeper in debt. Well, that was true then and is true today, unfortunately. Well, listen, this Investing Simplified. Carl, how does somebody get a hold of you?
You can reach me at 503-255-8795 or at warrenallen.com on the web.
And Kevin?
503-666-5569, and Baker & Coulson can be found at bakercoulson.com.
And you can find us on the web at pfgwm.com, and you can also go to my other site, askthefinancialdoctor.com, and I have several whiteboard presentations on there and videos that you might find of interest and a little bit of humor. And you can also contact my office at 503-253-3000 or toll-free at 877-50-PRICE. So have a great week, and we'll be back next weekend with Investing Simplified.
Investing Simplified.